This hour of the Jason Rancho is brought to you by 3010 Weight Loss for Life. Lots of news happening all around the world and right here at home. So, let's find out what's trending.
What's trending? National.
The big news of the day was this rather stunning press conference from Stephen McCraw. He's the director of the Texas Department of Public Safety, and he helped answer some of the outstanding questions from yesterday's very disastrous press conference. Again, I am a big fan of law enforcement. I'll call them out when they do things wrong, but I generally have a bias in favor of law enforcement. And even yesterday, I said that that was just not a good press conference, while understanding that there are times, as someone who actually covers a lot of police issues, I know that police sometimes have to hold information back, but the way that they handled this yesterday was just awful. And it would appear that some of the information that was held back was just very damning information. Very damning information as to what happened in Texas. So we know that the degenerate, Salvador Ramos, he crashed his car. He actually entered the school 5 minutes after that. He entered the school through not merely an unlocked door, but a door that was propped open, apparently, by a staff member. And he spent several minutes going into a classroom firing hundreds of rounds at innocent children and staff members. And it takes a certain level of soullessness, ghoulishness, to go up to a young kid and execute them. And yet that's what this monster did. Now, there was no school resource officer on campus. We don't know why. Apparently, the SRO heard the 911 call, drove over to the school. But when he did that, apparently the shooter was kneeling behind a car, and so the SRO wasn't able to spot him. Now, why wasn't the officer on campus? We don't know. They didn't have that information to share today. But the most damning of all of this was the decision by the local police to treat this not as an active shooting situation, but as a shooter who was barricaded. Now, an active shooter situation, you will act, not recklessly, but you'll act a little bit more urgently. When it's someone who's barricaded, when you treat it that way, generally it's because you believe that the direct and immediate threat of loss of life is no longer a concern. They were wrong. And according to the press conference today, there might have been some 8 or 9 children who were still alive. They screwed up. And Stephen McCraw said so.
Hey, from the benefit of hindsight, where I'm sitting now, of course it was not the right decision. It was the wrong decision, period. There's no excuse for that. But again, I wasn't there, but I'm just telling you, from what we know, we believe there should have been an entry at that as soon as you can. Hey, when there's an active shooter, the rules change. It's no longer, okay, it's no longer a barricaded subject. You don't have time. You don't worry about outer perimeters. And by the way, Texas embraces active shooter training, active shooter certification, and that doctrine requires officers. We don't care what agency you're from. You don't have to have a leader on the scene. Every officer lines up, stacks up, goes and finds where those rounds are being fired at, and keeps shooting until the subject is dead, period.
Except that didn't happen here. In fact, it took about an hour and 15 minutes before the breach actually occurred, and the tactical team that ended up killing the shooter arrived a little bit earlier than what we previously knew, but they were delayed from entering the building. And we reported it in the first hour. The New York Times reported, and we got confirmation that Border Patrol agents arrived at about 12:15. And yet the Uvalde Police Department held them back from going inside. This was a screw-up of not only massive proportions, but it cost kids their lives. Now, we learned that the shooter was barricaded inside. Both doors to the classroom were locked from the inside. He came out apparently at one point, but then went back in. Cops ended up getting the key from the janitor. And there was a moment during the press briefing today in which McCraw, who, again, is the director of the Texas Department of Public Safety, he was asked a little bit of an odd question, and it was a CNN reporter who prefaced the question by saying this might be the least well-received question here, but how are you doing? Because he was shaking the entire time, and he broke down because he understands what happened, and he understands the pain. He understands the screw-up by the officers there.
You know, forget how I'm doing. What about the parents of those children? You know, forget about me. What about me or officers and stuff like that? We take an oath to uphold the law and protect people. I mean, anytime something tragic like that, we want to know why it happened and if we can do better next time, is the bottom line. And call it like it is. It is tragic. Quite frankly, I mean, there shouldn't be anybody. You know, ideally, we'd been able to prevent it for, you know, identify this guy as a suspect and address it before he even thought about attacking, you know, on the 24th.
We don't know why that didn't happen. We know that he was engaged in some online conversations with folks. We know that we suspect that. They haven't confirmed it, but they made reference to some posts online that very clearly should have been seen as a red flag. We don't know why it wasn't seen as a red flag. Now, he also pointed out that their investigation is obviously ongoing and they are seeking out other people. Now, it doesn't mean they're seeking them out because they are a direct threat, but maybe they knew something. And if they knew something and they didn't say something, well, maybe we ought to find out why so that we can prevent things again like this from happening. And, you know, this will immediately go into police bashing, pretending that these officers and the ones who screwed up, as it would appear occurred, are somehow a reflection of all the officers out there, whether we're talking about the Seattle Police Department or the New York Police Department, that all cops are just like this. And of course, there are probably many cops who are listening right now, or anyone in law enforcement who are shaking their heads saying they would never allow this to have occurred the way that it did. So we'll see some of the police bashing that's been going on endlessly anyway. And then we'll see some of the bad faith politicking. I don't think that you can avoid politics in situations like this, because politicians will, of course, step forward to see if there are any policies that they can pursue that would make it less likely for something like this to happen again. But what I mean by the bad faith stuff is what we've seen over and over and over again, and we heard it yesterday from Eric Swalwell, who swipes right on Chinese spies. He has the audacity to come forward and talk about how, you know, he really understands what's on the line here. And those evil Republicans, they seem to just want people to die. The Joy Reads of the world. Republicans want kids to die. It is so disgusting. It is so disgusting. It is so bad faith. It's exploitative in the most cruel and disturbing way. Do you know who Jeremiah Ellis is? Is anyone out there, as you're listening, whether live or on the podcast, do you know who Jeremiah Ellis is? Does that name ring a bell? He's a 9-year-old boy who was murdered. He was murdered in Chicago, or near Chicago. Two men from Chicago, Richard Banks and Christian Anderson. One is 22, the other is 16. They have been charged. They're accused. We have gun violence in Chicago that happens almost every single day, and it is almost completely ignored because it's not politically beneficial. But okay, fine. GOP cares more about guns than they do about lives. Why does it feel like Republicans are the only ones talking about what's going on in Chicago? I go on the Faulkner Focus every single week on Fox News, every single week. And almost each time I'm on, with a few exceptions, we talk about violence. We talk about the innocent loss of life. And in many cases, it's kids or young people. Why is it that we're talking about it, but no one else talks about it? They talk about it here. And of course, everyone's going to talk about a mass shooting. But why aren't we talking about this more often? Because, unfortunately, for some, and by the way, this is true sometimes on the right as well, they don't get off the hook, we turn tragedy into politics. We could right now be having a conversation completely separate from policing, even. That's going to be a big part of the conversation. But pushing all of that aside, what can work? What can work? Sometimes it's really simple. In this case, how would he have gotten in if the door wasn't propped open. And again, I'm not blaming the staff member who did that. They obviously didn't know something like this would happen. But the reason why we have locked doors is so that we can keep a threat outside. Now, maybe ultimately, if that door was locked, he shot his way in somehow. He got in through a window, whatever it was. But it would have taken just a little bit longer for him to get into that school. Just a little bit longer, and maybe the SRO who was driving by would have found him. Or maybe someone on campus figured out what was going on and could call cops and say, he's at our front trying to get in. Oh my gosh, he's coming in through the window now. All of that plays a role. But we're not supposed to have a conversation, I guess, about hardening these soft targets. The soft targets where people are particularly vulnerable. Hospitals, for example. We do that there. Yeah, they have a few points of entrance, but they have armed guards who are there actually patrolling. We have businesses, again, like mine. We have one entrance into this building. It is secured by two security doors, multiple exits. Why we can't really even have a conversation about doing that in schools without being mocked? Because Ted Cruz is one of the people who's voicing it. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text message. 1-800-465-8770. The IRS continues to be aggressive. They're increasing the number of officers in Washington state. Don't try to take on the IRS yourself. Contact our local tax expert and advocate, Greg Nunn, at Nunn Better Tax Resolution. N-U-N-N. Nunn Better Tax Resolution. Find out what else is trending.
What's trending on the campaign trail?
We've got some interesting news in the hypocrisy folder. Big money is evil. Except when it goes to Democrats. Then the money is just. Then the money is necessary. When Republicans have big money interests, when there's some donor to a Republican candidate or the party itself, we hear the cries from folks on the left about buying democracy. Stop trying to buy democracy. And yet they will happily accept a ton of money, justified by the fact that, well, it's going to the right cause. George Soros, he's not trying to buy elections. How dare you? He is trying to save democracy by backing fringe politicians who go easy on criminals, releasing them to then reoffend. And I'm totally talking about you, George Gascon, in LA County. Everyone catch that? So there's this story in the New York Post today, came out this morning, and it's about this billionaire who you've never heard of, a billionaire who's donated tens of millions of dollars to Democrat politicians and different causes from the progressive side in what's being called dark money contributions. And he's a foreigner, which means you can't criticize him. Nope, it's not. No, I don't make the rules. I do not make the rules. In fact, guess what? Got some good news for you. He's Swiss. That makes him white. That means you can criticize. Yay. Now, his name is Hansjo Weiss. I don't know how to say his first name. H-A-N-S-J-O-R-G with two little dots around the O. Let's just call him Hans. Hans is likely funneling millions of dollars into the election in this midterms, according to sources per the New York Post. They say one Virginia-based think tank estimates that since 2016, nonprofits linked to Weiss have funneled more than $253 million to Democratic candidates and related causes, such as voter registration initiatives, one that benefits the Democratic Party, efforts to impeach former President Trump, and they call it donations, quote, through a dizzying array of related nonprofits. Now, the beneficiaries of this is the governor of Georgia, Stacey Abrams. She's running for re-election. She got $3 million, according to the New York Post. $3 million went to Nancy Pelosi back in 2020. $17 million went to the Priorities USA Super PAC, which has been linked to President Biden, who I'm sure is all about hating on the big money contributions until he benefits from them. Oh, but it's a Super PAC. He doesn't know. Now, this study, or this report, I should say, comes from the Americans for Public Trust Group. It's a conservative group. Caitlin Sutherland is the executive director, and she says, the foreign dark money revolving door is at it again, this time with their eyes set on the midterms. Weiss has already funneled hundreds of millions through his nonprofits to liberal groups that influence our elections, and now those very same groups are poised to engage in every policy and political fight all the way up until November. Now, the funny thing is, for me, I'm pretty consistent on this. If the money is coming from the right, if the money is coming from the left, if it's benefiting the right or the left, so long as you're not breaking any laws, I'm okay with it. I won't necessarily like the way the money is spent. I might not like the influence it has on a certain election. But the fact of the matter is, they have the right to do this. Money can buy you some speech. It's open to anyone so long as you can afford it. I don't buy into this lie, this gross lie, that somehow this means the rich can buy elections. I'll give you an example. Right here in Seattle, Amazon poured a lot of money for a local, from the local context, into trying to win back the Seattle City Council from all the crazy fringe people. Amazon obviously employs a whole bunch of people here in Seattle, but they also have a business here that has been hurt by policies that are created to destroy big business. And so they had a financial stake. And they poured a lot of money, again, in the local context, into these races. People saw the money that was spent, and Seattleites, as you probably know, are not very keen on businesses trying to influence elections. And the businesses' interest lost. The candidates they backed, with one exception, who was an incumbent, with one exception, they all lost. There was pushback. They saw the big money and they said no. So sometimes it doesn't just buy elections. If it bought elections, we would have a lot of different people in power right now. It can certainly help. It can certainly help. Now, we have this midterm election coming up. The red wave seems real. But always, of course, it's really easy to lose momentum, and you've got to keep that in mind. It's hard to keep up momentum when you're supposed to keep it going up until November. That is not easy. And as you know, the media is doing whatever it can to make it harder. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? National.
So progressive cities are failing. Some slowly, some quickly, some barely hanging on, which I think is actually a failure when you're supposed to be growing. Things are not going so well. And the pandemic revealed that a lot of people kind of already knew that their cities kind of suck. We got the Census Bureau just putting out some population estimates, and it showed that 8 of the 10 largest cities lost residents, and of course, more than those 8 lost residents. Now, they look from July 2020 to July 2021. So we're talking about the height of the pandemic. New York lost 305,000 residents. That's 2.5% of the 2020 population. You look at Chicago, they lost 45,000. LA, 40,000. San Francisco, as a city, saw the largest rate of decline, 6.3% of its 2020 population. That's about 55,000 residents.
When the pandemic happened, you know, I was really just focused on like living in my kind of shoebox environment. And really kind of COVID gave me a chance to kind of look for a little bit more space.
Like, it's not just about space. So he lived in San Francisco, talking to CBS News. He lived there up until the pandemic, and then he kind of realized something.
At the end of my time living in San Francisco, I almost felt like the city was kind of like chasing me out.
They kind of were. Like, they were chasing you out. They try to chase out people who maybe are not completely in line with their vision. And unfortunately, the vision in so many of these cities is what it has become. Filled with homeless people, filled with death from overdose. And yet, weirdly, you're paying $2,700 for that 500 square foot apartment. People realize very quickly, once they couldn't actually get out of their apartments, that the city doesn't offer them much. That when you shut down the restaurants, when you shut down the entertainment venues, it's not the best place to live. When just going to the park, you have to walk around human waste and use needles, only to get to that park to realize, oh, it's been completely overtaken by the homeless. I have to go back into my small little apartment. So they're leaving and they're going to Texas and Florida. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text message. 1-800-465-8770.
Yelp to come. Tacoma, Bremerton, Bothell.
This is the Big Local on the Jason Ranch Show.
Redmond, Sumner, Kent.
Stories about you, not about Seattle.
Hey, look at the time. It's 4:30 on a weekday afternoon. That means it's time for the Big Local. Brought to you by Alpine Specialty Services, online at alpineclean.com. This is the part of the show where we completely ignore stories coming out of Seattle, and instead, we focus all of our attention on you, the communities you live in, and we start near Bellingham, where this week, Marine interdiction agents with the U.S. Border Custom and Border Patrol seized about 1,500 pounds of meth from a boat on somewhere between Bellingham and Southwest Stewart Island. According to the release, CBP agents found 28 duffel bags containing cellophane-wrapped packages while they were inspecting a boat that was leaving U.S. waters. And you can imagine just for a moment how nervous those people were on that boat if they actually knew what was on board. Or were they stool pigeons for someone who's trying to get all these drugs into Canada or somewhere else? Tests of the package's contents confirmed that they contained meth. Officials said a 51-year-old Canadian citizen identified as Ted Carl Falpel was piloting the boat. He ended up getting arrested. He had a Glock 9mm handgun on him. And according to the officials say, look, we were just vigilant. There was something a little bit off. We know that narcotics are harming members of our communities. We know they're getting in here somehow. So we were just keeping up our red flags. And for whatever reason, this particular vessel caught their attention. He's being charged now, Falpel, with possession of meth with the intent to distribute, and faces a mandatory prison sentence of 10 years because of how many drugs were actually found on this boat. You know, again, we talk about this, and obviously this was leaving the U.S. water, so it was heading over to Canada. I don't know, obviously, and they haven't released any of the details on how the drugs got into this guy's possession to begin with. Did it come here from Washington State, or was he just passing through on his way to Canada? But at the end of the day, when you embrace this drug culture, as we have in many progressive cities, not just in this country, but in Canada, what ends up happening is people will take advantage. When you're basically telling people that you're not going to enforce the law, that we're not going to do anything more than maybe give you a ticket if you get high or if you get caught buying drugs or smoking drugs, whatever it is you're doing, guess what? There clearly becomes a demand that needs to be filled by these bad actors, or in this case, alleged bad actors, who are going to take advantage. And you've got cartels in Mexico. You've got bad actors in this country who are flooding individual neighborhoods and communities, cities, counties, states, with product because they know that there's little risk to the people who would actually buy the drugs. Thus, they're going to be more willing to go ahead and do so openly. And you need to meet their demand. These are addicts for the most part. Not always, but for the most part. So understand that all this is doing, this drug culture, is ensuring, absolutely ensuring, that more drugs come into our communities. Meanwhile, we got a pair of stories out in Tacoma. Apparently, the Tacoma City Council are concerned over two alleged chop shops in their area. Cairo 7 TV's Lauren Donovan.
Sergeant Darren Moss with the Pierce County Sheriff's Department says, you know a chop shop when you see it.
Then why are we calling it an alleged chop shop?
Strip cars, new vehicles coming in and out.
They're putting these monster cars together that look like Frankenstein with all these different parts and things.
He says what's happening at the corner of Pacific Avenue and South Division Lane in Tacoma is just that.
It's just becoming a dumping ground.
The sheriff's department has been called here before, but because it's city land, they can't investigate.
City Council Member McCarthy and Tacoma Police promised me that they are going to look into these alleged chop shops.
You're just going to look. You said you know one when you see one. So you're just going to look into it? I mean, okay. I know that obviously you need to have cause in all of this. You have to have probable cause. But it kind of feels like, yet again, if it's that open and obvious, if it's that clear what's going on, and let's just for the sake of the argument say that that's the case, what message does that send? What message should it send city leaders? Seriously, what message should that send city leaders? Like, maybe they don't feel the need to actually have to hide any of this because they know or believe that there won't be any consequences. Now, with the new police chief in Tacoma, I do believe that there will be consequences, but you still need to have a staff to go ahead and investigate these things. And then number two, you have to have, you know, criminals who will respect the law. And they're very clearly not. It just blows my mind that this kind of stuff is just happening pretty much in broad daylight. And let's stay in Tacoma because there are students there who saw what happened in Texas and they are concerned. And I understand that. They should be comforted to know that we live in a state where this very rarely happens. It can happen, so you should be on guard to a point. But we should have policies in place at various schools to ensure that we're mitigating the threat. You need to do that. You need to create a secure location. You have to harden some of these schools. And I know there are the phony comedians who are just partisans like Stephen Colbert and Jimmy Kimmel who laugh at the idea of hardening these schools, despite the fact that they operate in buildings that you can't get into because they're guarded by armed security and there's only one point of entrance. But, you know, you got to do what you can. And the question is, are we? And I don't know. It might depend on the school district that you're in. It might depend on the individual school and how old the school building is versus how new. And when we talk about it depends on the school district, it kind of depends on how much money has gone into this. When you've got some school districts that are getting more money than others, well, you're going to expect in some ways you're going to see better security at one school or one district than others. Earlier today, there was a protest of sorts, or a demonstration, really. Students over at Tacoma's Foss High walked out. They had some demands. Dee Sun over at Cairo 7 had this to say.
Some high school seniors say they still remember the deadly shooting that happened in the halls of Foss High School 15 years ago. One student was killed.
And gun violence!
Students say they're frustrated, one mass shooting after another. But little change on a national scale when it comes to gun laws. Some are asking for more systems of protection at school, like metal detectors.
Yes! Yes!
Yes!
So just real quickly, they say they want metal detectors. Okay, but remember, the last time, at least as a nation, we had the conversation about metal detectors, it was, do we want our schools to have to go through this? Because this makes it seem like the school is way more dangerous than it actually is. These are not prisons, they are schools. And again, you know, I certainly understand that perspective. I truly do. I do think that it kind of sends a message that your school is unsafe when you have these kinds of tools right there, because it just reminds you of the threat. But maybe that's worth it. And we're talking in this case about a high school. And so, you know, presumably students have a little bit more of an ability to comprehend the context of what goes into a decision like that?
Yeah, absolutely. We need it.
They're hopeful lawmakers will see their protests and listen.
It is an odd protest that they're demanding for, you know, different safety mechanisms. And again, we should listen in this case to reasonable ideas. If students are truly, and I mean this as truly scared to go to school and not trying to make some political point, which, let's be honest, a lot of students right now, 2022, especially in this area, try to do. They want to be a part of something. Now, if their concerns are legitimate, and by legitimate, I don't only mean the way they feel about safety, but the actuality on the ground, is in this case Foss High School or any high school or middle school or elementary, whatever it is it truly unsafe because of a lack of one entry point for the school, an emergency system, alarm system that doesn't quite work? Whatever the reason is that you might be concerned, let's look at it. I do think that there are times, like right now, because of what happened in Texas, to reevaluate the safety of our students. There's nothing wrong with that. It doesn't always have to be steeped in a policy. It doesn't always have to be steeped in gun control or a law. You can just use this as your reminder, even though you should be doing this all the time anyway, but just have another reminder to go in school by school, district by district. Leaders should step up and say, okay, are we doing things the best way? Are we doing things on the ground to protect kids if, God forbid, the unthinkable were to happen? And if the answer is yes, awesome. You spent some extra time double checking or triple checking, but you sent the message to the kids that their feelings on this of safety do matter. And if you find something that needs to be fixed, phew, be grateful that you were able to find it and fix it within a reasonable amount of time. 1-800-465-8770. Don't forget, I'm on Jesse Waters Primetime. If you're not able to watch it, you can check it out on YouTube, youtube.com/JasonRants. Welcome back to the Jason Rants Show on this Friday, Memorial Day Friday. Don't forget, I'll be on Jesse Waters Primetime if you're not able to watch it. It's all good. We got you covered. YouTube.com/JasonRants. YouTube.com/JasonRants. Or you can always text the keyword RANTS, RANTZ, to 1-800-465-8770. And obviously, we've talked a lot about the mass shooting in Texas, and that's going to continue to be front and center for so many folks. And we have to figure out, what can we do to stop this from happening again? And there was an interesting story over at Fox News today, foxnews.com, and it might offend some of the anti-Semitic caucus, aka the progressive Democrats, but it's premised on the fact that maybe we should look to Israel for tools and strategies on school security, because when you look at what's been going on in Israel, a country that is quite armed, in that case, so they can be protected as a nation against those who seek to destroy it, Hamas, the Iranians, Rashid Talib. And so from this piece, it says there have been 6 terrorist attacks on Israeli schools since 1974. That low figure can be explained by the multiple layers of security Israel employs and the engagement of civil society in aiding the nation's law enforcement. David Hazzoni, a writer and commentator on Israeli and American affairs and a father to 11 children, he spoke with Fox News Digital. And he pointed out that the country, quote, puts efforts into identifying potential assailants through behavioral profiling. Now, the second that you talk about any kind of profiling, immediately, at least traditionally, and I'm assuming they'll continue, but folks on the left say, well, this will lead to bias. This will lead to inequitable policing, whatever it happens to be. And maybe it would, or maybe it wouldn't. Maybe it actually leads to stopping some of these cold-blooded killers from going through with their disturbing, monstrous deed. Maybe this can help. How it would be implemented here, I don't know. But they say in this piece, Israel could not prevent attacks if its efforts were based solely on armed security guards at each school. Israel, quote, invests heavily in monitoring profiles of people. What does that mean? It means looking at social media activity. When you get those red flags, but they're just that, just red flags, where it can kind of go either way. And anyone, especially those of you who were younger when social media became as popular as it was, we all remember times when people would quote on their Facebook, or at the time MySpace, like some lyric from an emo song, and you're like, oh my gosh, what's going on with this person? You got some red flags going up. Is this person in need of some help? And sometimes they were, sometimes it was for attention. But when you get the right kinds of people who are trained on this, and they're seeing things that are posted publicly, maybe we ought to do something with that. We have Homeland Security that's out there able to stop a potential terrorist from murdering the president, President Bush. The story out of Ohio. We don't have anyone who's capable. We have no tools that are capable of flagging some of this language. You post on YouTube some video that says masks don't do much to stop the spread of COVID, and it'll get taken down. Their algorithm picks up those details. But when you've got a video of some kid playing a game on Twitch and live streaming it and talking about how he wishes he could do this at his school, that doesn't get picked up anywhere. No one has an algorithm for that. Now, there's always got to be that line you're going to have to walk so that you don't go too far, so that you don't go into a place of violating someone's privacy. It's not like I'm saying that the government should be monitoring everything that happens, but I am suggesting that maybe we can do so in a way on publicly available websites, not hacking into accounts or hacking into webcams on Twitch. But if you're going to tweet stuff or post on Facebook your penchant for murder, maybe we ought to have some tools where we can say, yeah, I'm going to be a little bit biased and presume this person is a danger, and we're going to escalate things a bit. You've been listening to The Jason Rantz Show on this Friday, right before Memorial Day. Hope everyone has a fun weekend planned. We still got more coming up on the show. Don't forget, you can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/JasonRantz, or if you miss any moment of the show, text the keyword podcast to 1-800-465-8770. And I'll send you a link, not just to my podcast, but also The Brian Suit Show. Text podcast to 1-800-465-8770.